Hi, I'm Fred Van Lente, writer of Archer Armstrong, Generation Zero, and Weird Detective, and I killed a man to get into the Court of Nerds. Take that, Rick Remender.
Yeah, take that.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Court of Nerds, the only podcast that bought a house, I guess.
Kind of.
It's Drew.
It's John.
We're the only two here this week. To kind of give you guys some explanation, because I always feel like we have to explain when we take time off. Summer and fall are crazy busy for us here at Court of Nerds. And you're thinking, oh, because it's con season and you guys are out doing stuff.
No. No.
Stacy is a wedding photographer. She's super busy in the summers. I'm a sports broadcaster. So once football season starts rolling around, my life gets crazy. I was lucky enough to go to Las Vegas to be part of the Mayweather-McGregor fight. And then John gets all of these crazy softball league and pool league, and we're so stupid busy, we just got to try and keep up. And so we're going to do the best we can to keep bringing you guys the podcast each and every week that we can. But some weeks we're not going to be able to, and you're going to have to depend on Sledge and his neighborhood. And that's going to have to be good enough for
Which
you.
Which is good, though. So
it's a great podcast. Kevin does really good work. Sure. But there's a lot of stuff for us to catch up on, for us to talk to you guys about, and we just kind of wanted to ramble our way through it and kind of chit chat about it. First and foremost, we want to remind you guys that we are your panel moderators for Grand Rapids Comic Con. We're very, very excited to be back this year. We're adding a couple of new faces. Of course, Sledge, who we just mentioned, wasn't able to make it last year. He will be there with us this year, and we've looped in a friend of the podcast to be an additional guest moderator. We're very excited to announce Biff Tannen.
Woo.
Some of you may know him as Zach, but we know him as Biff around here. Will be joining us.
He's been on the show.
He's been on the show quite a bit. We love him. He is a big nerd and somebody that we love having on. So we're going to need some help this year. There's a lot of great panels that we, your Court of Nerds, will be moderating. We'll have that schedule out as soon as we possibly can for where you can find us at Grand Rapids Comic Con. Make sure you like GR Comic Con on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. That is the best way to get all of the news from them as it happens. So, there is that update. Another update, Defenders has come out, and we have all finally watched it. Or at least we hope that you finally watched it. I think, John, I was the last one in the Court of Nerds crew to really get through it.
Out of the three that were going to be here tonight, you were the last, yes.
I was the last. I was kind of the holdup for this discussion. So, fair warning, if you have not watched The Defenders, maybe click us off for the next, like, 5 minutes and then come back, or skip ahead 5 minutes in the podcast.
We're not going to have too much to say, and it's probably going to be spoiler heavy.
So. It's going
to
be really, I think it's going to be fairly spoiler heavy. I thought this could have been done in 6 episodes. Easily. I also think had you broadened the story a little bit, you could have stretched it to 10 or 12 if you wanted to. Told a little bit more of everyone's story. Involved a few more other characters. Had a bit more episodes that were centered on each character.
Yeah. I think 8 was pretty good, though. I think Netflix is starting to get the whole 8 is good. 13's stretching it out. Let's rock 8.
8's good. 8's not great, but 8's good.
It did feel like it did stretch just a teeny bit, though. Like,
I thought it could have been 6 episodes. I thought if you want to keep it at that even number, 6 would have been right. Because, and again, I thought that whole first episode was mostly garbage. Like, I watched the first episode of Defenders, and it ended, and I was like, wait, what the hell?
Well, yeah, you, like, ask me, like, it gets better, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, it does.
Because after Iron Fist, I spent a lot of time trying to defend the character of Iron Fist. I can't defend this version of Iron Fist anymore. And I want to be very clear about something. A lot of the speculation has been Finn Jones is a bad actor.
It's not him.
No, and I don't know if he's a good or bad actor. But this is not the right role for him. It's a bad fit. And it's a badly written character. It is a poorly written version of my favorite character in all of Marveldom.
Yeah, you've been pushing that since Iron Fist came out, that it's just a bad... It's just a bad version of Iron Fist. And it's like, do you blame it on Finn? Do you blame it on the writing?
Do we blame it on the producers, on the directors, on the showrunners?
Exactly.
My solution for this, by the way, because I hate presenting a problem without offering a solution. My solution to all of this is that you can keep Finn Jones in the role, but if you do season two of Iron Fist, you need to have someone who understands the character. And I'm all for Kari Andrews, close personal friend of this podcast.
Just give him a call.
Kari Andrews has directed television. He has written for television. He's directed film and written for film. He's also written some of the best Iron Fist stories to come out in the past 5 years. Give the reins to Kari Andrews. Hand him this show and let him fix this bastardized version of a great character. Or you scrap the Iron Fist solo series and you do Heroes for Hire. You team him up with Luke. All of Iron Fist's best moments in the Defenders are with Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And that team is so good in comics for a reason. Because they are balance. They are one and the same. They are yin and yang. Yin and yang? I don't know. But they are the perfect counterbalance for one another. And Mike Coulter is so strong, he can carry the parts of Finn Jones that are weak. And I mean not necessarily in a physical sense, but probably in a physical sense.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
A little bit of both. Probably a little column A, a little column B. I was, as always, impressed by Simone Missick, who plays Misty.
Yes.
She was phenomenal, is phenomenal, continues to be phenomenal. Kristen Ritter really impressed me, playing well with the ensemble cast. You know, Jessica Jones may be the least popular of all the characters involved here, but she really did a phenomenal job, I thought. Of course, Charlie Cox and Mike Coulter delivered. You got a lot out of your villains. I wanted more. It's the Hand, man. This is one of Marvel's like top three evil secret organizations.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were saying though that the woman who plays Elektra kind of just mailed it in too.
Elodie Young. Really felt like she didn't want to be there. You know, it really felt like this was a contractual obligation for her, and I'm a little upset. Because I think we're going to see her again. And she just was not impressive. Like, physically, yes, she's impressive. Her stunts are impressive. Her kung fu is good. But as an actress, she did nothing that wowed me. You know, nothing that made me go, yeah, that's that shit right there. And you know what I hated the most? Colleen Wing and the Night Nurse being reduced to damsels in distress. Right? Like, how much garbage was that? You got two badass chicks. And for some reason, you've reduced them to these, like, whimpering roles hiding in the police station. And then when they do come out, they're like, oh, yeah, we're women, but we need help. It takes three of us to beat one guy. So it was a little disappointing for me. I really wanted to see Marvel have them be in far more affirmative and positive roles, because Luke Cage doesn't survive without the Nurse. Right. Danny Rand doesn't survive without Colleen Wing. Give these women the credit they're due for propping these weak men up.
Yeah, I mean, Rosario's just been a godsend to all four. Is she in Jessica Jones? All four of the series?
Yeah, briefly she was in Jessica Jones, but yeah.
Like, she was just sweet, she's in this now, too. Like, that's how I thought of it. Like, oh, they're going to expand her. They're going to make her a main character. And then, like you said, they just kind of,
right. Well, there's a moment in Luke Cage, because I'm rewatching Luke Cage because I just wanted to feel good about Marvel again, where she says, I want to help people. I want to help people with powers. That's what the Night Nurse does. That's the Night Nurse in comics, is a secret nurse for superpowered people to come to. And I kind of want to see her grow into that role. You know, I would love to see Marvel do a version of ER on Netflix.
You could do so much. That's the thing. Like, yeah. You could just do so much. It does not have
like
to be
a really attractive house.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's our little tidbit on the Defenders.
I'd watch it if you want like a review. I mean, definitely I would go.
Yeah, I mean, long story short, I'd watch it. It's 8 episodes. It doesn't take that long to get through. It's a bit of a slog at first. It's not great. the fight scenes are even kind of a disappointment when they do happen, and there's not as many of them as you want.
No, it's not like episode 4 of season 2 or 1 of Daredevil, where you're just like, what is going on?
Right, or when Luke Cage goes through Fort Knox.
Exactly.
You know? I wanted one of those moments. I wanted one of those epic, burned-in-your-brain fight scenes, you know? And, John, you're referring to the one-shot in Daredevil, right? Where it's all... I think that's episode 2.
Is it 2? I'm thinking of Wilton Fisk thing, then.
Oh, yeah. Either way. Also
but.
Great. Listen, it was all incredible. Okay, Daredevil was incredible. Luke Cage had great, memorable fight scenes. Even Jessica Jones was memorable for its noir vibe and its constant mystery. And quite frankly, I think the second best villain in all of these series, Kingpin being number one, of course.
Mm. Yeah. Oh,
but you just wanted so much more. And you never got it. So there would be my review of the Defenders, is you're just waiting for more.
Maybe the Punisher will, like, bump it back up to where it's supposed to be, even if it's not involved in any way, shape, or form. Maybe be like, all right, well, they at least didn't blow this. It gives us hope for season 3 of Daredevil, which I really want season 3 of Daredevil.
Oh, I'm excited for season 1 of The Punisher.
Defenders open so hardcore with Daredevil, you're just like, what?
I think we're going to see them do some of the comic book stuff where Matt Murdock is having an identity crisis, where Daredevil is becoming almost a separate personality. So I think we'll see a lot of that. Luke Cage season 2, I think we're going to see the start of Heroes for Hire. I think he and Misty are going to team up. Some set photos have already leaked of the two of them, and they look badass. And then we've already confirmed Kilgrave is back for season 2 of Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
So you're going to have more David Tennant. What's wrong with more David Tennant?
I don't think anybody.
That's where I need Stacy to be like really excited, you know, or like an Emily squeal of some sort. So, again, just that. I want to delve into your world, John, because we're spending a lot of time in one of mine. Star Wars.
What about it?
All your toys came out.
They did.
You said they're pretty cool, but you're not dying to have any of them.
Well, first off, they have the like 3.75-inch figures that they have on sale for like $7.99. And it has all the, you know, the main characters, everything that came out. You know, you got Rey, Finn, all sorts. But then the Black Series figures are what people go gaga over.
They're the big collector items.
Yeah, they're like the six-inch, $20 figures. There's a special Snoke one that you can only get at GameStop, from what I've read. They put out a Thrawn one. They did a couple of reissues on Vader. And, you know, like the big one that, you know, you're going to want... It has Snoke with a throne and everything. And it's just, you got guys that are out there at midnight going to, you know, box these up. And I just don't think that these are ever going to gain value like the OG Star Wars toys from the 70s. Because you have companies like Hasbro that won't let you sell them on certain sites. And just, it's not going to, I don't think it's going to have that pull like it used to, because people are literally going out to buy these to make a profit on it. And the only profit that you're going to make is the profit right off the bat, because the normal everyday Joe like myself didn't go to Meijer or wherever, GameStop at midnight, and wait in line to buy this. So you're going to get that quick turnover money for it right now, and you're going to end up paying way more for it, and you're not going to have anything to show for it come 20 years down the line. Personal opinion. And I have a few of the Black Series ones, and I like them, and they're cool, but I'm not going to go out of my way to try to find something that it's just for me at this point. I'm not going to buy it to make money off of it. And in that sense, the Lego sets for this movie are ridiculously expensive as well. There's really no mid-range ones like there was in the beginning. Like, there was a $64 Y-Wing. There was a $70 X-Wing. Poe Dameron's X-Wing might have been $80. But the smallest one is $79, and it's like 837 pieces or something like that. So you're getting your money's worth there. The BB-8's $99. That's over 1,000 pieces, so you're getting your money's worth there. But the other sets are the They have the Kylo Ren TIE Fighter, which I don't think is worth the money because it's very expensive, small piece count. Then there's the First Order Imperial Star Destroyer, whatever the heck it is. That's $150, and that's not even 1,000 pieces, I don't think. So it's just they're getting bigger and bigger, but they're just getting more expensive for less piece count. One thing that you could go out and buy that would definitely be worth your money is the new Millennium Falcon, which is the largest Lego set that has ever been built. It took over the Taj Mahal. The thing is ridiculous. They put so much detail into this. If you go online, you can see the differences between the 2007 and the 2017 version of this. I mean, it's just the reason it jumped up 2,000 pieces is because they just put one piece here, one piece there, and a little sticker here.
Yeah, but
and,
how much depth is into it? How much is that bitch?
It's $799.
Eight bills.
But it does have over a 7,000 piece count. So
that's stupid. That's absolutely stupid. I get frustrated when Isaac gets stuff that's like over a 200 piece count.
Oh yeah, because you don't like to build it.
No, I don't. You get excited, so.
But they're pushing the toys. Just a little. the toys are out. So go buy them.
Yeah, I brought this up not because Force Friday has come and gone, but also because as we're doing this podcast, there is breaking Star Wars news. This is something that some of us kind of anticipated happening, but Lucasfilms has parted ways with Colin Trevorrow. He was supposed to direct Episode 9, the final episode of this current trilogy. But Lucasfilms has released a statement that says Colin has been a wonderful collaborator throughout the development process, but we have all come to the conclusion that our visions for the project differ. We wish Colin the best and will be sharing more information about the film soon. This comes just months after the exit from the Young Han Solo film of Phil Lord and Chris Miller. They were let go weeks away from finishing filming.
Thoughts? Well, I figured, you know, it's a good... I don't really know what to say. Colin...
Trevorrow's last film was The Book of Henry. It was The Book of Henry, which he wrote and directed, and it was abysmal. It was dubbed one of the worst films of the summer after Baywatch. And, you know, you saw people writing articles about it saying, no, this is one of those original films that's so bad, you need to see it to know how bad it is. I don't think Lucasfilm or Disney wants that associated with their brand. And they definitely don't want, because, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, the directors take part in the writing process of the film.
They have been.
And I don't think they see Colin Trevorrow as a strong enough writer. Because he didn't write Jurassic World, did he? He just came in and directed it.
I don't know.
I'll have to double check that.
Well, here's the thing, because, Leia died, and it just screwed it. When Carrie Fisher died, it screwed much up. It screwed so much up. They are like, they don't know what to do right now. I mean, how are they going to pull this off? Are they going to kill Leia in a space battle and move it to somebody else and let them be general? And like Episode 9, he probably had something in his head of what he was going to do, because her role was supposed to be even bigger in Episode 9 than it is in 8. This is supposed to be a Luke movie, and then Episode 9 was supposed to be the Leia movie.
Right.
And she's gone. Maybe he just tried to write something, and they were like, no. You had a great vision of what was going to happen, but everything changed when she passed away.
Right, and he is, by the way, on IMDb, credited as the writer of Jurassic World, and he's credited as an announced writer of Episode 9.
I mean, let's just for 2 seconds, yeah. Jurassic World. Was it a great movie?
No.
Granted, it made over $600 million. I think it's top 5 movies of all time.
Bruh, it was but the Chris little Pratt things, riding dirt bikes with velociraptors.
The little things in that movie, like her running in heels and things like that. I mean, I'm sure he had a little bit of a say and stuff like that. And it's like, I mean, yeah, it's a dinosaur movie, but make it a little bit more realistic. Maybe.
Come on, man. Get real with your dinosaur movie.
I mean,
movie
the science is there, so why not make the reality there as well?
Yeah. No, it's wow. That's
but it is shocking. I wonder who they're going to get. I mean, they went and got out. They went and got Ron Howard, who wanted to do a Star Wars movie when George Lucas owned it. So, are they going to go get a big name? Are they going to go get a big
name? Star Wars,
name?
Man, it's the last of a trilogy.
Well, I mean, it is Star Wars. And speaking of big names, we can go right into the next subject: Martin Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio.
He's playing in the DC sandbox, though.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, I think the first thing a lot of these studios are doing now is saying, hey, come make this awesome movie for us, but don't go make an awesome movie with those other guys. Do you bring back one of the guys from the first two episodes?
You don't bring JJ back. There's no way you bring JJ back. You definitely could bring back Ryan.
Yeah?
If it's good.
If it's good. If Last Jedi is as good as the previews make it look, I mean, you could have a chance at the ninth episode.
It's under such lock and key. Like, there's nothing. There's not a single bit of information that has come out about this movie. Not even the toys have really given anything away. And sometimes the toys do that.
Right, or like the
especially
pictures
with, or
on the
video
Lego
games
sets.
Yeah, or yeah, anything yeah. like that. It's yeah. just under lock and key. And you know what? I love it. And the people who scream for trailers are the same people who don't want to know anything about it. Like, how come this trailer hasn't come out yet? Why do you even want to know?
You don't want the movie ruined for you. Now, you did mention it, and let's go to that, because we're just going to beat our head against a brick wall trying to figure out who they're going to replace Colin Trevorrow with. And again, if you're just hearing this, we're just hearing this. Colin Trevorrow out as Episode 9 director. Differing visions from the Star Wars studio. Lucasfilm saying they wish Colin the best, and we'll be sharing more information about the film soon. John, I know you don't believe that last line, and neither do I. Sharing more information about the film. They're not going to tell us shit.
They won't even tell us anything about 8, let alone 9.
So, you mentioned Scorsese and Leo.
Yeah, I tried to do a segue. We weren't done yet, though.
I'm sorry.
It wasn't. It's cool.
But it looks like DC Comics intends to reboot the Joker before they ever gave him a solo film or really any sort of opportunity to shine.
Right, but isn't this supposed to not be part of the DCEU or whatever? That's what I
It's supposed
heard.
To be, yeah, but I don't it's know not supposed why to be you would do this.
You couldn't do it. You couldn't make a Joker movie that runs in line with the events that are happening right now. You can't do it. Because they have young Joker. You have 40-whatever-year-old Batman, 46-year-old Batman. You have young Harley Quinn, and you have young Joker in these movies. From what I see. I see a young Joker. I see a young Harley Quinn. I don't see a 47-year-old Joker. He'd probably have the same mentality as Batman if he was 47 and still the Joker at that point. Like, screw it. I'm just killing everybody. I'm not dealing with this BS anymore. Like, he wouldn't go through the... This is a personal opinion, but I don't think he'd go through the whole Joker-esque-ness of things and making it, like... We're gonna have this boat blow up this boat. He wouldn't do that. I know we're crossing whatever, but
crossing the streams.
I don't think he would do that. You can't make a Joker movie that runs in continuity with these movies. If you're gonna do it, they gotta do it the way they're gonna do it, and make a completely different outside of the origin or an origin story outside of the DC universe.
Here's the thing about this. And Esquire has an article from just a few days ago basically saying Warner's wants to start making films, comic book films, that can compete in awards season, like Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. And it's rumored that Scorsese is only producing this film. He's not directing it. The director they have in mind?
I think I've heard this.
Todd Phillips.
Yeah.
Who made The Hangover. When I think dark, gritty criminal underworld, I think Todd Phillips. What? Like, no. Hmm. No?
Is that all he's done? I feel like he's...
I'm sure he's done something else, but I don't think he's known for making anything other than comedies.
Yeah, he's like old school producer, Hangover,
Due Date. I mean...
What's he directed? Oh, he did direct War Dogs.
Which was a comedy. It was a comedy.
But it was good.
It was okay.
I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Again,
comedy, road trip. Yeah, all comedies.
The man has made nothing that screams, yeah, hand him a Joker movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, Esquire and the writer of this article, Matt Miller, points out
Project X, anyway.
What's that?
Project X producer.
Miller points out, though, that Leo's unlikely to take this role. That Warner Brothers floating this out there actually makes it even less likely for Leo to take the role. They said, considering Heath Ledger so famously played the Joker less than a decade ago, and DiCaprio has famously avoided these types of parts in his career so far, Leo has turned down Star Wars, Spider-Man, and being Robin in Batman Forever.
Chris O'Donnell probably should have turned that down, too.
Yeah. But the Esquire piece says, don't think Scorsese and Leo are enough to save what's an ill-fated idea in the first place. Now, what they've gone on to point out is that Jared Leto is P-I-S-T.
Oh, yeah. He's super pissed.
He's apparently called his agent and made them aware of his displeasure. And he's so mad about it that his agency didn't protect him. That a rival agency is trying to swoop in and court him over this whole terrible Warner Brothers mess. And it is a mess. Make no bones about it. This is a mess. You cannot cast actors in iconic roles and then just dump them or make little side stories that they're not in. The technology today is so good that if you wanted to make a story about a younger Joker or a different Joker, still use Jared Leto. You can just mess with his face until it's fucking right.
Dude, Jared Leto's got such a baby face with those mountain blue eyes of his.
Well, I think he was a terrible call for Joker to begin with. I didn't like the casting when they announced it.
Everybody said that about Heath Ledger, too.
I know, but I still don't, and I know you're going to hate me for this, and everyone else can if they want to. I still don't like Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn, I don't like it.
A lot of people don't.
I don't like it. Ugh.
It's because she goes in and out of her accent.
Yeah.
Tara Strong would have been way better.
Oh, she would have been so much better. And you know what? Almost as hot.
Yeah, guaranteed.
We're going to be bro-y for a second here. So it's a terrible move. It's just another misstep on the part of DC.
But here's the thing about Leto, though, is like I really, really enjoy Jared Leto. Like, I enjoy his band. You know that thoroughly. I enjoy a lot of the movies he's in. He's an Oscar-winning actor for Dallas Buyers Club. He's in American Psycho. He's in Fight Club. He's in a bunch of these movies. I mean, little roles, like Panic Room. But I enjoy him as an actor. I don't think they gave him the Joker that he could have made really well. If you watched any of the trailers for the new Blade Runner movie, he's creepy as balls in those trailers.
Yes, he is.
Oh, my God. Like, if you could have taken that guy and made that Joker, that would have been a better Joker than gangster check out my grill and my pimp clothes Joker. He has the potential as an Oscar winning actor to do a damn good Joker.
Yeah.
DC didn't do that for him though. If he invented that Joker, then that's on him. But I think a lot of it had to do with the writing. And the costume, I mean, I just don't think he had his hands in all of that to make that. Like, his hair was terrible, his makeup was terrible, his tattoos were terrible, his lines were terrible, even the blocking was terrible in that movie. Like, seriously, like, he is not a bad actor. And a lot of people, including people that we know, are shooting him down because of that one role. And I think that doesn't give him a disservice to him as an artist all around. Because I think he's better than what people are giving him credit for only in that movie.
Disservice to artists. John, I'm sure you saw this story, and I'm going to mispronounce this poor gentleman's name. It's Ed Skrein or Ed Skrein?
Mm.
Was the bad guy in Deadpool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
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 Ajax.
Ajax. Yeah. 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 Sure. Yeah. That was his name.
right?
No, it was. It was just, you know, they called. Anyways. for those unaware, director Neil Marshall is making an R-rated Hellboy reboot that will focus on different aspects of the Hellboy character. Now, one of the main characters is going to be Major Ben Diamio. I'm really bad at these names. There's not like a YouTube video that teaches you how to pronounce this shit, folks.
Yeah, guessing game.
Major Ben Diamio, who's a Japanese-American character. Ed is he's a white guy, Jewish, Austrian, and English. Yeah. And there was a lot of backlash from the film community, from the nerd community, about the whitewashing of the character. Here's how Ed chose to handle it, and this is his statement. Last week it was announced that I would be playing Major Ben Diamio in the upcoming Hellboy reboot. I accepted the role unaware that the original character in the original comics was of mixed Asian heritage. There has been intense conversation and understandable upset since that announcement, and I must do what I feel is right. It is clear that representing this character in a culturally accurate way holds significance for people, and that to neglect this responsibility would continue a worrying tendency to obscure ethnic minority stories and voices in the arts. He says, I've decided to step down so the role can be cast appropriately. Representation of ethnic diversity is important, especially to me, as I have a mixed heritage family. He goes on to say, I'm sad to leave Hellboy, but if this decision brings us closer to a day where everyone is equal, it's worth it. I hope that can make a difference. And Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy, congratulated Ed, said, nicely done, thank you. Hellboy will go back to the casting board, and Lionsgate, the studio making the film, says, we fully support Ed's unselfish decision. It was not our intent to be insensitive to issues of authenticity and ethnicity, and we will look to recast the part with an actor more consistent with the character in the source material.
Well, I guess I give him a round of applause for that.
Yeah.
I think if more people would do that, we would have more culturally diverse movies when they, you know, should be. If ScarJo turned down Ghost in the Shell and said, no, it's not a white girl. Or, in this case, turning the Hellboy thing down. Or whatever one you want to use, because there's a lot of them. They're all slipping my mind right now, of course.
Dude, you're okay.
But you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's happened a lot in film, and a lot especially in the superhero world.
Well, what do they just do? Can you Google this one? They just cast Starfire, right?
Yes.
Now, Starfire is an alien, right? Granted.
Correct.
Now, Starfire, even though alien, portrayed as a white woman for most part.
Kind of orange,
in the comics,
yeah.
Little orange, I guess. But when you think of Starfire, you think that's probably going to be a redheaded white girl for the most part, Starfire. But no, they turned around and they cast...
I think her name is Anna Diop.
Yeah.
Or Jop.
Who is of African-American descent. And you don't see, and I'm not trying to say anything bad, but you don't see any people bitching about this.
Nope.
Not one bit.
Well, no, it's the same thing they're doing in Deadpool 2. Zazie Beetz is playing Domino.
Domino.
A traditionally white character.
She's very... I mean, she's more... I don't know. She looks like Domino, though. Whether or not she's half black or whatever, I mean, that's a good casting.
Right. But either way, I think it's great casting. So I agree with you, John. I think that the casting of Starfire, the casting of, you know, Gamora being played, even though she's covered in green,
right.
You still know that it's a woman of color playing that role.
Yeah, Zoe Saldana. I mean, you even knew that when she was the big blue alien in Avatar.
Exactly.
Yeah, big blue alien. Whatever.
All you can ask for from Hollywood is steps in the right direction. And I think these are some of those. That being said, this podcast was a step in the right direction. We talked a lot longer than we planned on.
Yeah, we rambled.
We probably should have put your sausage in the fridge.
It's cool. It's still cool.
Well, that's fine. Don't forget, we are the podcast brought to you by Grand Rapids Comic Con. Be there October 20th through the 22nd at the DeVos. And it's going to be all over downtown. You're going to be able to see a schedule coming out soon. Until then, I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And we are your Court of Nerds.